21 years since LVI started. Really, the purpose of starting it was, I don't know if you remember back then, but I was doing programs for Baylor College of Dentistry live patient treatment programs, and the purpose for doing it here was so I wouldn't have to travel to Dallas to put the programs on. So I started it in my 3,000 square foot office, literally lecturing in our lunchroom for the team and sitting on a sink counter with crawling over chairs to get there. And then it just kind of took off, and that's when we built the campus in 1998, or the first part of the campus. And the second building was 2003.
Do you sense that you're dealing with a different dentist market now than you were before?
Yes, I think that's absolutely correct. Dentists are coming out of dental school now conditioned to be employees. When I first started LVI, everybody was a single practitioner, pretty much single practitioner. There were partners and stuff, but I was getting very few associates. They were mainly people that were bosses, right? And now every class is probably one-third associates. It's generally an LVI dentist or a progressive dentist who sends the associate to LVI to learn, but sometimes it's that they've heard about it and they'll come on their own and try incorporate it in the office that they're working with. But it just seems that today more dentists are content with being employees than those that, when, for example, when I wanted to be a dentist or I was a dentist, one of the reasons I went into it was to be my own boss. So that is a definite change, the sort of the corporatization of dentistry.
What is the typical dental practice in 5 years?
That's a million-dollar question. I think you're going to see, again, the two-tiered practice. You'll see the average drill, fill, bill, volume, you know, mall practice that is doing the basic dentistry. People will always need the basic dentistry. You're going to see a few of the niche ones, the sort of the Botox practices, and I don't have any problem with dentists doing that, by the way. I see the elite practices, sort of like if you look at medicine right now, right? The average practice is usually a group or PPO type of practice, but you have those executive physicians out there that are in sort of counter to the PPO or the Obamacare type of practices. They're opening their executive practices where they provide no wait service and a lot more service oriented type of medical practice. So I see dentists being able to do that actually in a lot more than physicians are doing.
And one guy had an interesting thought, Dr. Pittian, on. He basically said that he thinks that the practice of the future will be a closed but very integrated practice. In other words, you'd have some general dentist, you'd have a prosthodontist, you'd have a lab, you'd have an ortho, and it would be sort of a practice community, you having all the different disciplines. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know if it makes sense. I mean, I think there are those practices out there right now, and it makes sense from a standpoint of overhead. The problem is finding a philosophy of practice that everybody agrees with, because I've seen a lot of divorces, meaning partner divorces, because people can't agree on what to incorporate into their group practices and the type of dentistry that they would provide. I still think the happiest dentists are going to be those dentists that either are a two-partner type practice, single partner, where it's like the old days, so to speak, where they get to make the decisions and they get to determine what they put in somebody's mouth and how best to treat the patients, and they're more service-oriented.
What's new now?
Well, it's interesting because at our the annual meeting for the IAPA, we had the dean from a dental school, Gordon Christensen. We had the vice president of the ADA, and Omer Reed and Ron Jackson were on the podium as well. And it was about the future of dentistry. They all agreed that the number one thing about the future of dentistry was treating sleep apnea. And I do believe that is probably the direction. I mean, if you look in the 90s, it was aesthetics, and then it was implants, and I think now it's treating sleep apnea. And TMD, but TMD has always kind of been in there. But I think the future is treating sleep disorders, not just obstructive sleep apnea, but all kinds of sleep disorders.
So where does that put a dental practice? You know, some of the new equipment that's out there and some of the new procedures.
Well, there's lots of new things that are coming out all the time. And I do think digital dentistry is the future, but not so much from the in-office construction of restorations, for example, but from just a communication standpoint. The ability to communicate with your lab, the way to take an impression rather than using materials to take the impression. All that I think will evolve over the years as we become better and better at it. But even from the standpoint of diagnosis, I mean, we're already incorporating, for example, the computer in diagnosing patients and determining where their best bite position is and all that kind of stuff, like medicine's been doing for a long time, but for some reason dentistry has sort of avoided getting into that. So So I do see modern technology advancing dentistry a lot in the future. The problem is the cost. Because dentists aren't doing as well as they used to, and the ADA report is pretty alarming on that, I don't think that the average dentist can afford the equipment that really would make them much better dentists. I mean, if I had my choice, everybody would have a cone beam, for example, in their office, because you can do so much. And I'm not just talking about diagnosing teeth. I'm talking about, you know, looking at things like the joint, the position of the hyoid bone, which is affected by the bite, and the neck, and what is the bite doing to the neck. And there's lots of things that we can see in cone beam, but unfortunately the price is sort of puts it out of place. And the same thing with a lot of the computerization equipment, too, that I think is essential, like reading the EMGs of muscles, I think, is important.
Outside of dentistry and LVI, what are your favorite things that you like to do?
You know, that's kind of sad because my hobby is my work. I mean, as I told you, I love what I do. I love everything about the job, and it is a 24/7 job. But, you know, I'll play golf. I'm not really very good at it, so I guess you could call that sort of something I like to do. I fly my own plane. I love doing that and look for excuses to go places and fly. But other than that, it's my hobby is my job, LVI. We love it. It's just great. And you knowing that you can change somebody's life and they then turn around and change literally thousands of people's lives is a really gratifying feeling.
When did you start flying?
Actually, I graduated from dental school in 76, and I did a hospital residency program in Fresno, and I always wanted to fly. And I thought I was rich because I was being paid like $18,000 a year at the time for my residency program. And first thing I did was buy a motorcycle, and I drove the motorcycle to the local airport there in Fresno and took flying lessons. And so literally since, I think I got my license in 77, ever since then I flew on and off, but I didn't really take it back up. Once I started lecturing like in 1990, I pretty much stopped flying, took it back up again in 2006, I believe, and now it just, I mean, we've flown to Alaska, we've flown around the country with the kids, stopping at all roller coaster parks. I mean, it's just been great.
Tell me about the airplane.
I have a Piper Meridian. It's a six-seater turboprop, which means it's a jet engine, but it turns a propeller. And you can fly up there with the big boys. It flies at 28,000 feet. It goes about up at 28,000 feet. It'll fly about 265 knots. That's a little over 300 miles an hour. So it's a really nice plane, fun plane. Love it.
You grew up in Vegas, right?
Born and raised.
What do you like about being in Vegas?
You know, it's funny because when you don't know any different growing up, and it really isn't any different than any other town. I remember years ago, Time Magazine had it as the town of the country or something that it just talked about how it is. The only difference is I remember when I went away to college and I walked into a grocery store, it just seemed like they were either going out of business and it was so dead and quiet in there. And then I realized it's because they didn't have any slot machines. But it's just a normal town. You know, I never go down to the Strip, but I love it. I'm sort of a confirmed desert rat. I love the weather.
So what makes you happy these days?
Work. I know that sounds corny. Work makes me happy. And obviously I have a great wife and kids, and the family obviously makes me happy. But, you know, work is, I don't know how people retire and what do they get up for in the morning. And to me, to us, LVI is our passion-filled purpose. We're so passionate about it, and it's what I wake up for every day. It just gives me a purpose in life. And if I retired, I just think I would get so bored. So I don't know if I'm ever going to retire.
Do you have anything on your bucket list that you really want to do?
There isn't. I mean, the last thing that I took off my bucket list was skydiving, so that's out of the question. I don't really have much else on a bucket list. I've had a great life.
So I have two last questions that I always ask everybody. The first one is, what has dentistry really meant to you?
I don't know where I would be today without dentistry. I mean, it's opened so many doors, and I've lived the dream. I got to admit, I've lived the dream. I can't imagine my life without dentistry.
And the second question is, what don't people know about you that would surprise them if they knew?
Well, I think what surprised a lot of people who know me is what a dedicated father I am. I mean, I schedule my entire life with my kids, and their meetings and their appointments, and I'll get up and have to leave a meeting. I think that is my most important job, is to make sure that I'm there for my kids and that they get. And this is where the two tie together. One of the greatest moments was when my one son, who's now in Syracuse, was 10 years old. He said to me, "Dad, when are you going to retire from LVI?" And I said, "Well, I don't know why." And I said, "I don't know if I'm ever. It's going to be a long time." And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "I don't know. I love LVI." And I said, "Really?" And I said, "What do you like about it?" And he said, "I don't know. It's fun to go there." And I said, "Well, why is it fun to go there?" And he said, "Everybody seems to be happy there. They love what they do, and it just seems like it's a cool environment, and people like it." And that made me realize at that point that it doesn't have to be work, and hope that instilled in him that he needs to find his passion too, which I think he has. That do something that you love to do, and you'll never work another day in your life. And you've heard that saying before, and that is so true. So I think he saw something in there where I don't have to hate my job. I can do something where it's fun and I like what I do. And I hope that set an example for him for his future. And I really believe it did, because he's passionate about where he wants to go now.